Okay, so what I'm going to introduce you to this week is feeling. And this kind of has a word in Buddhism, particularly in Pali, so it's an ancient Indian language. It's called Vedana. So Vedana is a word which kind of means like to know or to feel. So it's not like an emotion, it's not like anxiety or anger or anything. It's more like something that arises immediately upon contacting something. So it's just like we're doing in the meditation. You experience something and it's pleasurable, unpleasurable, or neutral. Yeah. So all of this stuff, let me give you another experience. Like if you're on a packed underground train at rush hour, like Central Line, you know what it's like completely packed. There's a lot of negative Vedana going on there. You know, maybe you're sort of hot, so that's sort of evoking a negative Vedana. It's packed, your personal space, that's uncomfortable. Maybe you're tired, you've been at work all day, and you're standing up. So all of these things can evoke a sort of negative response. And we don't so much, we might think about them and turn them into sort of a narrative, but immediately they're just a sort of unpleasant experience, aren't they? Lots of sort of little unpleasant experiences. Like a positive might be something like getting a postcard in the postbox from a friend of yours. You know, you like get an envelope and it's got a handwritten address on it, and you think, that evokes a sort of positive, doesn't it? Suddenly there's a sort of pleasant sensation there, and you haven't sort of thought about it too much. It just sort of is. So these sort of positive and negative Vedanas sort of happen all the time. There's constant sort of flow of them. But what we do is so they're not yet emotions, but they are the sort of building blocks of emotions. So that, the consequence, so we might react to them. So the consequence of like being on that underground train where it's really busy and hot and packed is that you then react to those experiences and you start feeling a bit irritated or a bit angry. And so the sort of emotion is a sort of secondary level. Yeah, that sort of makes sense. Yeah. So these Vedanas, they're intrinsic. They're kind of like the texture of life. You can't choose to not have them. They just happen. So as soon as you encounter something, they happen. Positive, negative, or neutral. Yeah, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And if you look closely, you'll see that everything has one of these Vedanas attached to it. Absolutely everything. And that includes, in Buddhism, we talk about six senses. So we've got the five body senses, and the mind is a sense as well. So all the thoughts that you have will also have a Vedana to them. So every time you remember something, it will have a Vedana. It will be positive, a positive or negative feeling associated with it. And what Vedana we have is based on our past experiences, our past conditionings. So it could be that, so what these experiences do is they develop into a patterning, like the way our mind works. It's a bit like water cutting a river, into rock. The way we experience our lives gradually wears away certain grooves. And those grooves mean that we have a tendency to react or respond in a certain way. Not reacting, it's more like it's the initial impression, the reacting comes later. So you might, for example, take the instance of hearing a dog bark. So you ring on a doorbell and a dog barks. And if you grew up with dogs and you're very sort of like, you like playing with them, it might be quite a positive thing. It's a sense of sort of getting to stroke this dog. But if you've been bitten as a child, then you're likely to not have that positive. You're likely to have a negative Vedana. You're likely to feel, that sort of negative sense, which can then turn into fear, if you see what I mean. Yeah. So the Vedanas that we have are conditioned by all of our experiences. Yeah. And we're active in this too. So it's not just sort of things that have sort of circumstantially happened to us. It's also things that we've done or things that we do. So take the instance of being at work with people. If you know, if there's somebody that you gossip about, that you complain about, like so-and-so doesn't do this or doesn't do that or leaves washing up in the sink or whatever, when you encounter them, you feel a bit sort of unpleasant, don't you? You know, you sort of feel a little bit of aversion to them, yeah? So it's a sort of unpleasant stimulus. But if you actually rejoice in a person, if you're talking about how their positive qualities, then when you experience them, it's a pleasant sensation, isn't it? You know, we help to create these grooves that we experience, and therefore the Vedana that we encounter. So we can't do anything about the Vedana in the moment, but there is an opportunity to change the Vedana we have in future. That makes sense? Yeah, I'll talk a bit more about that in a minute. So yes, this Vedana can quickly develop into mental states. So you know, if we have lots of negative, like unpleasant Vedana, we get irritated, we get angry, and we start to sort of, get grumpy, don't we? Same if we have very lots of positive experiences, we start feeling, really good. This can, we have sort of feelings of contentment or, like happiness. All of that is sort of a result of the sort of sum total of the Vedana that we're experiencing. But as I was saying last week, we kind of fit the world to our sort of views, don't we? You know, we sort of like have a sort of lens that we see the world through, and we fit the world into that. So, you know, if we are experiencing negative Vedana, the lens that we're seeing the world through is kind of a bit grey and a bit black. So we'll fit in the things that happen to us into that sort of schema, and that creates a negative mental state overall. The opposite's also true. If we have lots of positive Vedana, a positive pleasurable experience, we can see the world as a really nice place. But the thing to get is they're all sort of slight distortions. Like not the Vedana, and the Vedana is just there, but the sort of stories and the narratives we use to put the world together, how we experience the world in terms of our temperaments, our personalities, our perceptions, and all of that. So you know, you take the so the thing to say is we're also not usually mindful enough to notice that process happening. Usually, it happens very quick. You know, Vedana, mental state. Yeah, very, very quick. It almost feels like it's one thing. But actually, if you look, they're two separate things. But we're usually not quite aware enough to notice that. So the experience of, you know, being on the underground train, where it's packed and it's hot and it's busy, is you might get a narrative like, oh God, I hate living in London. And what am I doing living here? You know, or why am I doing this job? Or, you know, if I didn't get out of work so late, I would have got home before the rush hour. Or, you know, particularly we're like around people. I mean, if we're in a rush, it can be like, oh, look at this idiot in the way. What the hell are they doing? You know, and they've just sort of stopped to say goodbye to their friends or something. And yet, immediately we've got, you know, the Vedana is that there's sort of something getting in our way, and so we're then creating a narrative about it. I mean, there was a really funny one where I was waiting on a tube station, and this woman walks on, looked at the board. The departure board, and it said how long the trains were to be, and the train said 3 minutes, and she huffed, you know. It's like only in London would you get fed up when the train is like 3 minutes to the next train, you know. So, but we like to blame, don't we? We like to sort of, when we're experiencing negative Vedana, we blame somebody for it, you know. It's like train drivers or people in the way or, you know, unmindful people or whatever. We like to spread around our negativity, don't we? We're really good at sharing it. The thing to say is that, or the thing to try to notice, is that these reactions make us unhappy. Yeah, they make us unhappy and they make other people unhappy. So, like pleasure and pain, that first level of Vedana is just part of life. Yeah, so. We experience both of those. We're always going to experience both of those, but we then sort of label on top a whole load of reaction, a whole load of sort of stuff, stories that we add on. So there's a classic kind of metaphor in Buddhism about two arrows. So, you know, the pain in life is like being shot with an arrow. And what we then do is we like wonder who shot the arrow. You know, what's the arrow made of? Why has it happened to me? Oh God, an arrow, you know. The Buddha says, if you shot with an arrow, just pull it out. Don't worry about where the arrow came from. Don't worry about who shot it. Don't worry about why it happened to you. The main thing is get rid of the arrow. But so he said that this reaction that we spend our time doing is like being shot with a second arrow. So yeah, we're shot with an arrow, we're in pain, but what we then do is we then shoot ourselves with another one. Yeah, we don't deal with the first arrow, we just shoot ourselves with the second one. So it's these, so we're never going to be able to get rid of pain, but what we can do is change our reaction to it. And that reaction can stop us experiencing more pain or more difficulties. Yeah, we don't need to react to things. We can actually change our reactions to what happens. But the thing that we usually fall down on here is that our instincts don't help us. So the human instinct is to push away pain. Yeah, if we've got pain, we don't want it. And what we do want is pleasure. Like, yes, I'll have more pleasure, please. So, you know, we want to pull pleasure towards us. So a lot of our life is about trying to organise life in such a way that we can maximise pleasure by pulling it towards us and minimise pain by avoiding it. I mean, that would be well and good if it worked, but it doesn't work. So, if we are really good at doing pushing pain, trying to grasp pleasure, and if it worked, we'd all be very happy people. But it doesn't work. It doesn't work. I'll explain why in a moment. But Buddhism would say that you only have to look at your own experience to notice that. If you look closely enough, you should be able to see that this grasping or this craving and aversion is actually causing us more suffering one way or another. Let me talk about the pain first, I think. So pain and pleasure. So let's talk about pain first. So the negative Vedana that we experience, the unpleasant sensations that we have in response to things, are part of our sort of adaptive threat mechanism. Yeah. So we share this with animals. When there's something that we don't like, or something that's not good for us, we generally don't like it. Yeah. So the thing to do in survival is just to get away from that thing. But our lifestyles are not quite like that anymore. So there's lots of other things that we think is threatening, but aren't really immediate threats. You know, like emails from your boss, for instance, or like packed tube trains. You know, they're not an immediate issue for our society, for our survival. Sorry, but we do react as though they are an actual threat. You know, like our adrenaline levels go up. Our bodies get ready for the fight or flight mechanism. You know, there's all these sort of physiological changes that happen, which mean we're sort of ready to react, aren't we? You know, that fight or flight mechanism is ready to, you know, if they attack you, attack them back. And we go about our lives ready to attack people. So it's sort of no surprise that when we're inundated with negative Vedana, we want to react either physically or psychologically to people and to, events around us. If it was a sort of poison spider or a snake in the jungle, then fair enough, but it's not, you know, it's just a load of people on the tube. So what we need to do is try and see that happening, if you see what I mean. We also, biologically or psychologically, well, neurobiologically, we have got a bit of both. We have a sort of propensity to notice the negative sensations more than the positive. From a sort of evolutionary point of view, that makes more sense because the the negative stuff is the sort of dangerous stuff, whereas it doesn't really matter where you get your pleasure from so much, if you see what I mean. So we're slightly preconditioned to bias towards the negative a bit more. So that's why it can often get on top of us. So we sort of need to just sort of notice all of that. Notice when we're feeling unpleasant Vedana, and try to notice what our reactions are, what our sort of propensity to react is, and how that's sort of unfolding. I mean, it's not particularly easy to do, it must be said. It takes, like I said, it happens so quickly, you know, there's like Vedana reaction, you know. It takes a while to kind of feel our way into that, but it is possible. And if you sort of practice that, you can avoid that second arrow, you can avoid the reaction, you can avoid causing yourself more pain. Yeah, and it's not because it's particularly spiritual, because we're trying to, you know, achieve a sort of heightened state of consciousness. We're just trying to avoid causing ourselves more pain, and also others more pain as well with our reactions. Yeah, so it's actually we're trying to limit the damage that negative, unpleasant Vedana causes us. And partly, I think. You know, the reason that we try to sort of avoid pain a lot, push it away, is because we think of it as a sort of very constant experience. You know, we sort of imagine unpleasant things we have to do, and we just think, oh, that's going to be really awful. You know, sitting with that pain, like even physical pain, sitting with the physical pain, it's just going to be really unpleasant. But actually, it's not quite that constant. Like, if you bring your awareness to unpleasant sensation or even to physical pain, what happens is that it changes quite quickly. It's a bit like weather, it can sort of blow through you rather fast at times. So even, yeah, bringing a bit of awareness can just alter that. I was hearing somebody in the group I was sitting in just saying that, oh, when they were doing the body scan, some pain in their back changed. You know, it does actually... it's not a constant experience, it does move. All we need to do is to bring some awareness to it. And so as well as pain, there's also pleasure. You know, there's just as much pleasure in life as pain. Someone, I don't quite know where the quote is from, but I really like it. Someone says that human existence is like pleasure and pain woven fine. Yeah, so I really, really like that. Like, you know, they almost run, you sort of can't have one without the other, can you? They're sort of all part of the same fabric. We chase it, don't we? We, you know, in some ways a lot of our lives in modern society, particularly modern consumer society, are about chasing pleasure. And chasing pleasure usually means buying pleasure or, you know, going on holiday or, you know, trying to appropriate more and more. What can happen? I mean, pleasure's sort of fine. There's nothing wrong with pleasure. You know, it's very, very good. I mean, but the problem is that we don't often experience the pleasures that we have. We spend most of our time worrying about the next pleasures. You know, usually even while we're trying to enjoy the pleasure that we currently have. You know, like the best example is eating, isn't it? So having seconds, you know, or you're eating a dinner, or you're having pudding. And it's really lovely, but immediately you're starting to think about, oh, I quite like a bit more of that, you know. And you're starting to sort of wonder how, if you can get away with it, particularly if you're at a dinner party, you know. Are you going to look a bit fat or a bit greedy if you ask for a bit more? Or, you know, can you, you know, do you know what I mean? You're all sort of familiar with it. And then what happens? You have seconds, and you're just a bit full, aren't you? You know, and it's not very enjoyable anyway. And then you sort of sit around and go, "Oh, I ate too much. Why did I have that second bit of cake?" Our life would be much better if we could just enjoy the pleasures that we've already got, without trying to think into the future all the time. You know, actually, at worst, that chasing pleasure can actually turn into real pain. You know, there is a problem with having too much pleasure. We habituate really, really quickly to pleasures. You know, like if you buy a big bar of chocolate, by the time you've got down to the fourth or fifth square, it's nowhere near as nice as the first square, is it? You know, like even we haven't even made it all the way through the bar yet, and suddenly the pleasure's not nowhere near as intense, and so we just sort of eat the rest of it without even noticing about it. We habituate really strongly, very, very quickly, and you know, this can cause real problems. So this is basically the mechanism which happens in addictions. So, you know, first time you have something, it's very pleasurable, you have a bit more, it's a bit less pleasurable, so you have even more, and then that's not quite as pleasurable. And then that can quickly fall into a very dangerous pattern, yeah? And, of course, we talk about drugs and alcohol, you know, they're the most extreme examples, but I expect we all have things in our life which we've become dependent on, you know, like it could be coffee, glass of wine after work, sex, you know, Wi-Fi. I get very annoyed if I don't have Wi-Fi. You know, I'm definitely dependent on that. We get upset with these things. So these things no longer particularly bring us as much pleasure as they did anymore. We're just now dependent on them. We just now need them. And the consequence of not having them is lots of unpleasant Vedana. So there's not even really much pleasure anymore associated with them. So, you know, it can sort of not even be very, it's not very good sort of chasing this pleasure all the time, and it can have some quite serious consequences if we're not careful in some situations. But the main thing is that we just notice the pleasures that we have. So we probably have quite a lot of pleasures in our lives already, and what we want to do is we want to feel them more, we want to enjoy them more, we want to, I mean, this is what I'm talking about having a sort of richer life. We probably don't experience many of our actual pleasures, you know, and you can even get into a sort of situation where you're kind of trying to accumulate as many nice things as possible, but without actually experiencing them. So I always what this brings to mind for me is people who go travelling but don't really allow any time to sort of stop or see anything, you know. So you're literally going from, I did a bit of travelling in South America when I was younger, and you'd meet people who were just like going from one place to another, to another, to another, to another, like hardly spending a day anywhere, and you just thought, oh, that's a bit tragic, isn't it, you know, that's a bit tragic. Like you're not actually stopping to experience all the sort of effort you've put in. It's almost like you're just sort of, you know, you can just sort of accumulate experiences now, can't you? Like, oh, I've done a parachute jump, done a bungee jump, gone skiing, and you know, done this, but did you really stop to enjoy each of those things, you know? Or did you just pack your life full of things that you thought would be pleasurable or interesting, exciting experiences, and sort of they actually didn't make much of an emotional impact in the end? You just sort of did them quite mechanically. The other thing I noticed about this is that, I don't know if this rings true for you, but you can sort of sometimes experience or try to sort of you can sort of have pleasure in retrospect, or think you have pleasure in retrospect. So remember, there's a little bit of a confession, but when I was younger, I used to be really into clubbing. So I used to be clubbing a lot with my friends and, you know, take a lot of drugs and go to house parties and so on, that sort of thing. But what I'd always notice is that, you know, afterwards, like a week later, everyone would be like, oh, it was a great party, it was so good, really, really good, amazing, amazing, it was so good, let's do it again. And what I remember from the actual experience is it was pretty awful, actually. Yeah, it was actually pretty horrible. You know, like so-and-so got lost and couldn't find so-and-so, and so-and-so was being sick and they had an argument, you know. And yet we put on a sort of veneer on it or something, don't we? Or sort of we retrospectively remember it as better than it was. We didn't actually experience any pleasure at the actual time. So I don't think that's pleasure at all. I think it's just sort of a story, isn't it? Yeah. And I think we can do that. We can do that a lot with a lot of things. You know, like going out to dinner at a restaurant or something. You know, there's lots of situations where that can be in place. So yes, pleasure is everywhere, and you can just enjoy it. You can just enjoy it. So living with full attention. The reason we're doing this course is so we can relish that experience. You know, we can really live a fuller, more pleasurable life. And there's actually quite a lot around when we actually stop and look. When we stop trying to pack our diaries full of pleasurable things. But the clincher is, as soon as we want more, as soon as we try and crave and grab more, we actually get less. Yeah, and as soon as you're thinking about the next pleasure, you're not experiencing that pleasure you've got at the moment, and you're getting less pleasure. Yeah, that's what's happening. It's a trick, it's a con. So what we need to do is we need to try and let go of that grasping, try and let go of that pulling towards us of pleasure. And if we do that, the experience can actually unfold, so it's no longer crushed by our own expectations of what the pleasure should be like, and it can actually get much bigger, can actually be really pleasurable. So you might notice this most keenly in meditation. So, you know, you're sitting there and suddenly you sort of start feeling relaxed or a bit tingling, and it sort of feels quite nice. And then you can either go, oh, what's that? That sounds good. And you sort of hone in on it and you try and get it, and it just disappears. It just vanishes. But the thing to do is to try and sort of go, I call it like going under the radar a little bit. Just try and pretend it's not really happening. Yeah, just sort of like do 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 do. It's like, oh, no pleasure here, no pleasure here, and it'll you know, it can get a bit bigger. It'll grow, but it's not just in meditation. That can happen sort of anywhere. You know, you particularly when things are a bit unexpected. So you know, you walk around a corner, and suddenly there's like an amazing vista or something that you weren't expecting, and suddenly there's like this strong sense of wow. You know, there's like that awe. It's not, there's not a sort of narrative, not a story, it's just a positive, pleasurable experience. So just watch out for that. Watch out for that. So yeah, like, you know, the flowers will be coming out soon. And last year I remember walking through a park and suddenly I could smell flowers. I hadn't smelt flowers in 6 months, you know, and it was really sort of, really pleasurable, really strong experience. So you can notice these, if you're aware, you can notice these little experiences all around you. But the main thing is we only notice them when we stop chasing the things that we think make us happy, that we think are pleasurable. Okay, the other thing to say is that, you know, there's pleasure and there's pain, but often a lot of our life is just sort of grey, isn't it? It's a bit neutral, a bit sort of nothing. you know, we can experience this quite strongly. So we're conditioned. Our society is conditions us to want quite strong experiences, to get quite strong experiences. You know, there's a lot of strong experiences around that we could sort of just have all the time. So consequently, this means that a lot of experiences that aren't very strong just feel a bit nothingy. And you know, too much of this neutral experience we call boredom. And I don't know about you, but when I experience boredom, it's really unpleasant. I'm really not good at boredom, and I really hate it, you know. So, you know, our reaction to that is to try and get more pleasure, isn't it? To try and sort of push that away and try and get more pleasure. So we're back in that cycle again. So we all have our own habitual ways of dealing with neutralness, of greyness, of nothing. And most of the time it involves getting our phone out. And just sort of, you know, having any stimulation to try and avoid that. But it can be also all sorts of other things, like eating, can be like, you know, putting a lot of music on, so you're constantly distracted on the radio all the time. Could be like being on dating apps or whatever. A friend of mine's a gay guy, and he's on Grindr a lot. So I don't know if Grindr's a bit like a gay hookup app. And he's a bit funny because, you know, he's really promiscuous. So, you know, he'll like head out and have a threesome before breakfast or something. It's just like, you know, and it's just partly, I think, it's like that he just sort of can't quite sit with his boredom, can't sit with his nothing experience. And he's got habituated. But he's got, you know, the thing is, he's got habituated into this strong experience all the time. And, you know, actually he's done really well because he's noticed that is causing him a lot of suffering, and he's altered that behaviour. Yeah. So, but he had to sort of bring awareness to it. So we'll all have our own. I'm not all suggesting we have that level of acting out of our habits, but we will all have our own in its own way. So the thing to do is try and identify what our own patterns are, particularly when there's neutralness, when there's nothing. So yes, if we can be with So the reason we experience boredom is because we have that lack of awareness. We have that lack of developed awareness, and we want to try and just be with that neutralness without reacting. You know, we'll still feel it's neutral. It won't suddenly get pleasurable, but we just want to be with it as it is. But when you can just be with it, then other, it lets in other pleasures, other things can happen. So particularly, you know, you might notice on your mindful walk, suddenly you're aware of a few more things around you. You know, it might feel sort of a bit nothing, and then suddenly you're aware of sort of birdsong, or you notice the winter light, or, you know, I think Ratnachudra was saying he noticed his shadow on the ground and he wasn't usually aware of it. So by not reacting, we create a space in our minds for other experiences to come in. And often these experiences are the pleasurable ones, these little sort of quite simple experiences. And part of that is being in the body as well. So we're often in our minds a lot of the time. We're often in our thoughts, and you know, the reactions are all heady most of the time. So when we're in that narrative, when we're in that story, being in the head narrows our experience. And the great thing about the mindful walk is it's encouraging you to think more about your body. So be in that experience of walking, and that means that you can you balance up your experience a bit more. You broaden it out. You're not just in that narrow head experience anymore, and that again allows the possibility of other experiences coming in. So you know, like the light is a sight experience, isn't it? The birdsong is a sound experience to our ears. You know, so this opens up the doors to these other experiences. So what we need to do here for this week is we need to, well, basically all the weeks, but we need to work on our minds constantly. So we can't rely on our instincts here. So our instincts are trying to lead us away, and we need to work against them for this week. So what we're going to try and do is bring awareness to our Vedana and separate it from our reactions. So just notice if your experiences are pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So we don't want to apply any judgment or any narrative. We're just going to notice whether each experience is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So at first you might only notice this after the reaction. So it might happen so quick, you know, Vedana reaction, that you don't see that. But if you, once you notice, just try and look back and see what the Vedana was. With practice, you should be able to get to the point where you notice the Vedana before you have the reaction. Yeah. So I was telling a few people today, I've sort of been getting a bit irritated at home and I can't find my stuff. So today, like this week, I was noticing that, oh, I'm experiencing irritation, or, you know, negative Vedana, that's irritation. So I was able to sort of track back to what my, you know, the negative Vedana was that I can't find something. Negative Vedana, and the reaction was irritation. Yeah. So just trying to sort of deconstruct that. If you can notice it before the reaction, then you've got an opportunity. So this is the gap. Yeah, this is the gap. So our reactions are dictated by our stories, our patterns, and our habits. But if you can get into the gap, then you've got an opportunity to write a new future for yourself. You're not constrained by that habitual pattern of activity. You've got the possibility of acting creatively, of acting in a new way. And you can, with time, you can unhook unhelpful habits and patterns that we want to change. But the key to it is this gap. The key to it is noticing the Vedana without getting into the reaction. Yeah, this is the doorway to everything we're doing here, and is a really important thing. So this doorway is the doorway to growth. It's the doorway to change. It's the same doorway that the Buddha used to get enlightenment. Yeah, so. To transcend normal human consciousness, exactly the same doorway. So what we're going to do for this week is we're going to try to train that faculty to notice the Vedana and try to get into the gap which gives us choice. So it might be that you can't get into the gap just yet, but the first step is noticing the Vedana. You're noticing, is the immediate response to any stimulus pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral? Yep. So don't worry if you can't do that in the moment. The practice is still useful. Yeah. So you are, as I said, developing that faculty. Yeah. It does take a little while to master. Yeah. So In terms of home practice, there's a lot of home practice in the book. I'm recommending we don't do all that home practice because I think it's, what we want is a good core practice which is helpful to us in our life, not trying to overburden ourselves with too much. So what I'm going to suggest this week is we continue with our mindful walks. But for this mindful walk, we notice the Vedana in our experience. So as you're walking along, what's your response to things you encounter? So it might be that there's a siren that goes by and that's very unpleasant. Could be that you encounter dogs and you like dogs, so that's pleasant. Could be that there's people get in your way and that's unpleasant. It could be that it's cold or it's raining and that experience is unpleasant. So we're just going to notice the Vedana in our mindful walks. And if you can, try to catch it in the moment before you tell yourself why or before you interpret it too much. But if you only notice it after, that's okay as well. Just try and get back to the root of the Vedana. What was the Vedana initially? So yeah, continue to do that. Yes.
Sorry, can you say that again?
Yes. Any particular bit or?
Oh, the whole lot.
The whole lot.
No, just the bit about noticing. So you've got whatever the experience is. You like the dog, or you don't like the siren, or whatever, and you're looking for the space.
So particularly, you're noticing that experience. So what I really want you to do is just try to identify whether you're experiencing pleasure or unpleasurable experience or neutral experience. Mm-hmm. So that's really
what... So you said something useful about... and then notice where the narrative takes you.
So,
but don't get involved in it.
So what you'll so as soon as you experience a pleasant, unpleasant or neutral sort of response, usually what happens is we then interpret it in terms of like a thought. It's like you see a dog, you feel pleasurable. Oh, I like dogs. It's a German Shepherd. I used to have one of those. You know, I used to take it for walks, and then a memory starts, and then you're into a whole sort of like load of papuncha about your holidays with your German Shepherd. But what we're trying to do is just get back to that sort of. That sort of first impression, is it pleasant or unpleasant or neutral? So without any narrative, it might be that the narrative just starts and you're not quick enough. In which case, try and step out of the narrative, and just come back to hang on, that was actually a pleasant experience, So yes, you're not going with the narrative, you're not going with the stories. If they do arise, just again step out of them. That's partly why we're doing it as a part of the mindful walk, because we're staying with our body sensations as we're walking, and so we're just going to try and stay embodied and notice the pleasure as it arises, pleasure or the unpleasant stimulus as it might be. If it's a siren or if it's a cold day or something, you'll experience unpleasantness. Try to step out of any narratives that happen, and it will mean coming back again and again. Like obviously. You are going to go off and you are going to get distracted and think about, your
email. Is it a bit like the breathing when you're sitting?
Yes, in the same way, coming back. But the particular emphasis is on this noticing the feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the pleasant, unpleasant or neutral.
Mm.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great. Okay, and there's another thing which I want you to do, which is do a short exercise called a breathing space. So breathing space is a 3-minute exercise, and it's on it's in page 95 in your book, and I'll teach it to you just before we finish today. But it's a really, really good way of stepping out of a reaction. So if you notice a reaction happening, so when you're in a stressful moment and you feel yourself about to go into a reaction, do a breathing space. Yeah? It can be done really, really quickly. You don't have to get into a meditation posture or close your eyes. You can do it anywhere. You can do it in a boardroom. You can do it in the street, in the shops. You can do it on the phone. So it's a really good way of stepping out of that reaction, trying to damage limitation of whatever your reaction is about to be. Yeah, because these reactions are not helpful to us. These reactions cause us pain. So we need a more creative response to stop ourselves. Shooting ourselves with that second arrow. Try to do the breathing space whenever you notice yourself going into a reaction. So that's the main things, the main two things I want you to do. Yeah. So if you feel like that's enough, just do those two. Yeah, so I'd like you to come back and say, yes, I was able to do those as much as possible. If you're getting a lot out of the course and you want to, you've got a bit more room to go a bit further, a couple of other things I can suggest. One of them is a Vedana diary. So this is where you do the same as the mindful walk. You just notice your feelings, whether you're pleasant, unpleasant or neutral, and you just make a note of them. Yeah. So you could just choose to do it for a day. You might want to do it on a weekend, for instance, on a Saturday. And just go about your day, keep a little notebook with you, and whatever happens to you, you know, you meet somebody in the street, or you know the tills are really busy at Tesco's, whatever. Just write down what your Vedana was from that experience. Just so we can start to learn a bit about what our patternings are. So how it particularly presents for us. I wouldn't recommend doing that every day, but you might just want to pick a day to do it next week. And the last thing, which is actually really, really useful if you can do it, is to start taking up a regular meditation practice. So what I would recommend is taking a step up from wherever you are. So if you don't meditate currently, starting a meditation practice. So if you're starting, I would just recommend maybe 15 or 20 minutes a day, maybe sort of two or three days a week. Yeah, pick something realistic. If you already meditate regularly, then try making it a daily practice. Yeah, and if you meditate daily, try to up it a little bit. You know, could you add another 5 or 10 minutes on? Yeah, is that possible? The meditations you can do, if you're not familiar with meditations, you can just do a sort of meditation like we did at the beginning, you know, just like a body awareness meditation, where you go through your body, you feel how each part of your body is, and you just, you notice that experience. Yeah, if you did that for 15 minutes a day, that will have a real difference, a real impact. And as thoughts arise, you will have to get thoughts, and as thoughts arise, you can watch them and perhaps label them as, what's the feeling behind it? Is it a positive, negative, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral thought? And then get out of the thought, let the thought go. Yeah. If you already meditate regularly and you're used to sitting every day, then there's a series of exercises in the books on page 104. So there's actually, Machabani's given a short emphasis for your meditation each day. And they're actually really very good. They actually look like they'd be really good to explore. So you could just choose to do that for the last 10 or 15 minutes of your meditation practice each day. Just look up what the theme is and bring your awareness to bear on that each week. So yeah, you can just sort of explore them. So that's it, basically. The main two things are the mindful walk with awareness of feelings, and the breathing space when you're feeling reactive. But yeah, if you've got time, the meditation practice and the Vedana diary.